For several years, the Tea Party has held individualism up as the great American value, but Washington Post columnist and Georgetown University professor E.J. Dionne Jr. says that while Americans have always prized individualism, they've prized community just as much. In his book, Our Divided Political Heart, Dionne, who can be heard sparring with New York Times columnist David Brooks once a week on NPR's All Things Considered, outlines his response to the Tea Party's overarching tenet of individualism. Dionne writes that the conflict between individualism and communitarianism sits at the heart of American political divisions. It's a great pleasure to welcome E.J. Dionne to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate
it. Oh, it's great to be with you, Joe, and I think you know that I lived up there for 4 years, 2 years downtown in Albany and 2 years out in Old Chatham in Columbia County.
So indeed, and you would come
to be reunited with the area.
And you would come into the station regularly, and we always loved having you here. Give me a sense, first of all, I really enjoy your work with David Brooks, and I assume he's a man you respect.
Oh, he's actually a friend. I mean, we don't fake that on the radio. David and I have known each other for a long time. Our kids played travel baseball for many years, a subject that is near and dear to our hearts. And we have some agreements and some disagreements. And I told David, for those who are regular listeners to our back and forth every week, that writing this book was a joy to me, partly because I finally figured out why David is crosswise to American politics these days. It's because he is the last surviving American Whig, and I think his ideology is very close to Hamilton, Clay, and Lincoln, which I argue in the book is a very important part of conservatism that a lot of conservatives have been forgetting lately. So wherever I disagree with David, I'm glad he's upholding that tradition within conservatism.
The subtitle of the book, The Battle for the American Idea in an Age of Discontent. Your definition of the American idea?
It's a good question, and some people, of course, would dispute the idea that there is an American idea. I think there is an American idea, and it's the idea of liberty rooted in community and common obligation. I like to point out to people that the first word of the American Constitution is not the word I, it's the word we, as in we the people of the United States, in order to achieve a series of goals that we can only achieve in common. And I think the Declaration of Independence begins with a ringing endorsement of liberty, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, but ends with a commitment by the signers to pledging their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. It's the idea that, yes, we do and should honor liberty, but our liberty can only be defended if we come to the aid of each other's liberty, and if we build the kind of communities and the kind of society nationally that can sustain liberty. And so my argument with the Tea Party is not that our history is unimportant. Indeed, one thing I do praise the Tea Party for is getting us all engaged in this debate, and I argue in the book that progressives, I think, have not sort of embraced the American story enough themselves. Where I disagree with them is in their reading of the Constitution and their reading of our past, in particular the notion that government did not become an important part of American life, the federal government, until, say, the progressives or New Dealers came along, and that's where Clay, Hamilton, and Lincoln come in. I argue that from the very beginning of the Republic, government played a central role in creating the country that we live in today, the most aspects of which all of us welcome.
You make the point very early at the very beginning of the book that fear of decline is one of the oldest American impulses, and when we feel we're in decline, we sense that we have lost our balance. And then that's when the history comes in. What did history teach us? What have we learned? What have we not learned? So when you go back to the 2008 election. So where are we now in terms of that in this, because we're still not balanced?
Right. And we're having a very big argument with ourselves, the kind of argument we have periodically in our history. And it's at heart, it's an argument over who we are. And you can't get to an argument about who we are without going back to our history. And I argue at the beginning of the book that we disagree about who we are because we disagree about who we've been. I say to friends that the book begins on the subject of American decline, even though I am emphatically not a declinist. The fact that we go through these bouts of feeling we're in decline, first of all, says something about what a high opinion we have of ourselves as Americans, that we usually think we are in a position from which we can decline. Secondly, I think that did shape the nature of the 2008 campaign. When you look at President Obama's core slogans in that campaign, those posters with the word hope on them and the slogan "Change We Can Believe In," I've always thought that the word "believe" was as at least as important as the word "hope." And when we have these declinist feelings, we quickly have a sense of a kind of spiritual crisis, and hope and believe were very clear answers to that sense of spiritual crisis. Now, it turned out that the problems that we had, particularly the economic problems, as we saw this morning with the disappointing jobs report, took longer to solve than we had hoped they would. And I think President Obama is in a tough fight for re-election because, first of all, you can only run as a kind of national savior the first time before you actually take office. It's always harder, no matter how well you do, to do that the second time around. And that some of these practical problems have proved extremely difficult to solve. I think the question in the campaign is, which path do we want to go on? Which path do we think is most promising to solve the problems? In the book, I argue that a balanced approach that honors the private sector, that says no one wants to abolish the private market, no one wants government to take over the bulk of the economy, but if you look historically, government has played a central role, first, in pulling us out of trouble, and secondly, in building the kind of institutions that keep a country strong over the long run. And I think that really is the centerpiece of the debate between President Obama and Governor Romney.
When you look at the Tea Party and the very point of your book, I mean, you sense of, okay, this is who they are and what they want, and I don't know even that can be, that clearly defined. But will they find it in either of those two men?
Well, I think that Romney has moved closer and closer to the Tea Party's view. I agree with the underlying point you just made. There are a lot of different kinds of people who repaired to the Tea Party. Some are pure libertarians, some are more religious conservatives, some are disappointed, actually, with the Republicans in Congress, and some are very, very extreme. I point out that some, at the right end of the Tea Party are a lot of ideas that have been around for a long time and that were pioneered by people like organizations like the John Birch Society. That doesn't make, I want to say quickly, I'm not saying that characterizes all members of the Tea Party. But at this point, I think the Republican Party and conservatism have, I hope temporarily only, bought into a kind of radical individualism as declining conservatism. And one of the arguments I make in the book, I have a long chapter on conservatism, which at least a number of my conservative friends have accepted as a respectful view of conservatism. I think conservatives used to place community at the center of their own ideology. Liberals and conservatives argued over what was the role of the federal government in promoting community and strengthening local communities, but community was an important category for conservatives. President Bush, whom I disagree with on many matters, nonetheless tried to pioneer what he called compassionate conservatism. And I think the reaction against both President Bush on the right and obviously the ascendancy of Barack Obama has pushed conservatives to a reaction against compassionate conservatism, against communitarian conservatism. And I think this is a real loss for American conservatism. William F. Buckley Jr., the great American conservative commentator, one of the last books he wrote in his life was a book called Gratitude, which was about what we owed each other. And here was a guy clearly committed to individual liberty. But he understood, again, that we don't preserve that liberty unless we pay our debts back to society, and that there is such a thing as society to which we owe something. And so I want conservatives to rediscover this common good, community-minded aspect of themselves, and that's one of the reasons I wrote the book.
The chapter on conservatism is prefaced by a chapter on liberalism, in which you talk about why the left embrace community.
Right, and I think that liberals came to be identified themselves with a kind of purely individual rights tradition, and Ronald Reagan was a very shrewd politician because he understood that liberals were often seen as critical of local forms of community. He embraced family. His famous trilogy, Ronald Reagan's, was a family, work, and neighborhood. And I think progressives and moderate Democrats as well, notably Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, realized that liberalism couldn't just speak to the matter of individual rights or to the matter of what people might want from government. Liberalism itself was rooted in an idea that we are part of a commonwealth, and that liberals had to talk not only about rights, but also about responsibility. And I've been hoping for a long time, pretty much ever since I wrote a book some years ago called Why Americans Hate Politics, that we might reach at least some consensus on this balance between rights and responsibilities. And I think it's one of the problems, maybe even tragedies, of American politics, that as liberals came to embrace this notion of balancing individualism and community, rights and responsibilities, conservatives started veering toward this form of radical individualism. I think if we want to end the kind of polarization that we see as so destructive in our country, I think we might begin to come together around this balance. And then within the framework of that balance, we can have a lot of legitimate arguments about exactly what do we want government to do, what exactly is the balance between the state and local. But as long as we are having such a fundamental argument, it becomes very hard to have more constructive arguments about how to solve problems.
The book is just terrific. It's fascinating. It's called Our Divided Political Heart, The Battle for the American Idea in an Age of Discontent. And it really is just good reading, especially this election year. E.J. Dionne is the author of the book. It's published by Bloomsbury. E.J., I thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you back on our airwaves.
And a real joy to be with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.